All right, well, so good morning. First of all, I want to welcome Zachariah Leibowitz, who's joining us this morning for the daf. Mamish, beautiful, beautiful. So just lest you think that Arabin is beyond you, just you remember that Zachariah is here. So today's daf is daf pei. So we're going to start the last two lines of Ayin Tes Hamud Beis. So the Gemara says the following. We left off, Ha Nami Sabi Deplo Amra Meimar. Last two lines. Amr Amimar said, Ha Nami Sabi de Pumpadisa Amihu. There's another statement that the elders of Pumpadisa made. The Itmar, because the elders of Pumpadisa said, Ezuhi Ashera Stam. What, how do you know if a tree is an Asher? Rashi says, Afagav de lo chazina le de palchua, machzikina le bahaki. How do you know if a particular tree is an Asherah? Obviously, if you see people worshipping it, then of course that's a good indication that it's an Asherah. But let's say you don't see people worshipping it. Is there other type of circumstantial evidence that could go ahead and indicate that a tree is an Asherah? So Amarav, Rav said, Kol Shemeshah, say Avodah's Kalubim Shomer Noso. Anything that attendants of Avodah Zorah watch it. So meaning I want to say, if you see people who you know to be individuals who are attached, or really Misharsi means individuals who are in the service of Avodah Zorah. If you go ahead and you see them watching this tree vigilantly, that's indicative of the fact that most probably it is an Asherah tree. Furthermore, it's fruit. So apparently, again, with the Asherah tree, because people considered it sacred, it would have therefore been sacrilege to go ahead and partake of the fruits. Ushmul Amr Shmuel says, Kigon Da'amri, if you have a tree where people say, Hani Tamri, these dates, I mean, we're talking about a date palm over here, Hani Tamri, L'shichra Debe Nitzrafi, L'shasulei Biyom Chagam, or if you hear people speaking about the dates of a particular tree, and they say, these dates are going to be used in the Bein Nitzrafi. Rashi says, Shema Vol Dezorah, Shahi Sabaos Samadina. This is the name of an idolatry. We're going to use it in the house of Nitzrafi, because we're going to use it to make beer, to take a drink on their holiday. Okay? Amr Ameimar, Va'amr Li Sabi de Pumpadisa, and the others of Pumpadisa told me, Hilchasa Kavase de Shmuel, that the halacha follows Shmuel. Meisve, Gemara raises Akasha. Ketad Mishnatfin Bemavui, how do you make a sheet of Muvaos? I must remember again, the Mishnah that we spoke about towards the end of yesterday's daf, and I in Tesamud Beis was speaking about ultimately how you make a sheet of Muvaos, and the Mishnah came up with a much easier way than collecting food from every single person, every single chazer. The Mishnah explained that one guy could go ahead, bring forward a barrel of food, bring forward, daf pei, ADA, about four lines down. So now, so the Mishnah said one guy could come forward with a barrel of food, and I said you give him a zakat. He could give over the rights to that food to everybody and all of you. Everybody's attached to the mavui, and that's how you make a sheet of mavos. But the Mishnah said, remember, one of the interesting caveats is that the individual who owns the food cannot be the same one who ultimately gives over the rights of the food to everyone else. You can't be the makna and the kona. You can't be the person who ultimately owns it or is giving it over and the one who is acquiring on behalf of others. So the Mishnah said he has to give it to someone else who's independent of him, and that independent person could acquire it on behalf of everyone else in the Mavui. But with the Mishnah said, the caveat is that the person who goes ahead and acquires it on behalf of everyone else must what? Must lift it up a tapach. So the Gemara raises a kasha. Kate said Mishtatfim b'mavui, how do you make a sheet of Mavos? Mevim chavis shalyan, you bring a barrel of wine. Vishal shemen, or a barrel of oil. Vishal tamar, or a barrel, a basket of dates. Vishal grogros. Grogros are also unripe figs. Vishal shamine peros, or any other fruit for that matter. Imishalo, if all the contents of the barrel belong to the individual, tzarach lezakos, then he has to go ahead and give over the rights. He has to give over the rights to the other people of the mavui. Vimishalohen, however, again, if he's taking other people's dates, other people's produce, tzarach lodia, he has to tell them that he's using their objects to make a sheet of muvos. Umagbia minakarka mashu. And let's say, assuming that the contents of the barrel belong to him, and now he wants to give it over to someone else, he has to give it over to a third independent party. A third party who's independent, right? And that person has to lift it up a tefach, mashu. So the Rebbe says it seems to contradict the Mishnah, because what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says you have to lift it up a tefach. Here the price seems to indicate all you need to do is lift it up a mashu. First the Gemara says, no. My mashu, nami deka amar, tefach. What's a mashu, Rebbe say? A mashu is a tefach. Okay. Itmar, shitufei mavuos. When it comes to sheet of mavuos, Rav Amar Ein Sarech Lizkos, Lizakos. Rav says you need not actively give over rights to someone else. Ushmuel Amar Sarech Lizakos. Shmuel says, no, you have to go ahead and give over rights to someone else. Eruv Tchumin. However, when it comes to Eruv Tchumin, Dibro said, this is talking about a case where you're going ahead and now you're making the shituf on behalf of someone else. Do you have to actively convey an ownership interest to the other people being included in the shituf or not? So Rav says, no. Shmuel says, yes. Okay, the Gemara goes on. Eruv Tchumin. What about when it comes to Erev Tchumen? And now let's say you want to include other people in your Erev Tchumen. Do you have to actively give over interest, ownership rights or not? Rav Amar Tzarech. Rav says you have to. Ushmuel Amar Ein Tzarech. Shmuel says you don't have to. So the Gemara says, Bishtam al Shmuel. So according, Shmuel's logic is sound, even before we know what his logic is. Why? Hacha Tanan, V'hacha Lo Tanan. Because all Shmuel is doing is following the Mishnah. But in the case of Shituf Muvoz, the Mishnah says you have to convey an ownership interest. In the case of Eruv Chatzeros, the Mishnah did not say you have to give over an ownership interest. See, even leaving aside Svara, Shmuel is just following the Mishnah, as they're explicitly stated. Ela l'Rav my taima. But according to Rav, what's his logic? Meaning, why is it that Rav holds by Shituf Muvoz, you don't have to give over an ownership interest, but yet by Eruv Chatzeros you do? To which the Gemara says, By Shituf Muvoz you do not, but by Erev Tchumen, you do, thank you. To which the Gemara says, Tanoihi, it's a machlokis Tanoi, the Amorav Yehuda Amorav. Listen to this case, Rav Osai. Ma'ase bakalosos Shrabi Oshia. There was a story that happened with the daughter-in-law of Rabbi Oshia. Shaholcha lebeis hamerchatz. She went to the bathhouse. Now Rashi points out over here, Shaholcha lebeis hamerchatz, mi ba'od yom. So she went to the bathhouse while it was still day for Erev Shabbos, while it was still day, chutz l'tchum ira. Now the bathhouse was outside of the tchum of her city. And what happened? V'chashchala v'asrala lachzar. So what happens? So now Rashi points out that it got dark. So she lost track of time. And by the time she comes out of the bathhouse, it's already Shabbos. So what happens? Back to the Gemara. So v'chashchala, got dark. V'irvula chamosa. Now, interestingly enough, this is a good mother-in-law. So her mother-in-law made an Erev Tchumen for her. Right, so again, the daughter-in-law is in the bathhouse. She didn't even realize that, bless you, that Shabbos had already come. The mother-in-law realized that her daughter was not yet back. She realized that her daughter-in-law was going to get stuck. So she made for her daughter-in-law an Erev Tchumen that would allow her daughter-in-law to come back into the Tchum. Uba ma'islef me Rabbi Chiya va'aser. So this episode came for Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya says, doesn't work. Amr lo Rabbi Shmuel. So the Gemara says, Amr lo Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi, Bavloi. So Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi said to Rabbi Chiya, Babylonian. I will say, when somebody else calls somebody else a Babylonian, that generally wasn't a compliment. Right? You Babylonian, kol kach ata machmir be'erevin. Why are you being so machmir with Erevin? Kach Amr Abba, my father said, kol sheyesh lecha lahakel be'erevin. Hakel. Wherever you could be lenient in Erev, so we'll say, remember what's happened over here, that was the last one. Alright, so now, remember what's happening over here, Rav Osai, is that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is upset because, I'm just going to get my names right over here, Rabbi Chiya said that the Erev, that the mother-in-law give me 1 second. Okay, right. So remember, I'll say the mother-in-law of Rabbi Yoshia's daughter-in-law, right? The mother of Rabbi Yoshia's daughter-in-law, good, went ahead and made the era for her daughter-in-law. So comes along Rabbi Chiya and said it's Asur. Rabbi Shmuel says that's ridiculous. Whenever we could be lenient in the laws of Erevin, we always try to be lenient in the laws of Erevin. So the question, Rabbi Osai, is now what we're going to try to analyze is, why did Rabbi Chiya say it's not good? Right? What was Rabbi Chiya's problem with this setup? So the Gemara says, V'baylehu. So the Gemara says, and we ask the following kasha. Mishal chamosa irvala. So what was the problem, according to Rabbi Chiya, with this Erev? Was it the fact that the mother-in-law made the Erev from her own food, and she did not give over the rights to her daughter-in-law? So we want to know mechanically, what was Rabbi Chiya's problem with this Erev that the mother-in-law made? So possibility one is that the mother-in-law made the Erev from her own food, right, Erev Tchumen now, made the Erev from her own food, and she did not convey ownership of that food over to her daughter-in-law. So was that the problem? Oh, Dilma, or maybe the problem was Mishela Irvala, or maybe the problem was what, Rabbi Osai? That Lemaisa, the mother-in-law made the Eruv from the daughter-in-law's food. I said, what was the problem? umishum dishalo midaita, but she made it without the daughter-in-law's knowledge. Now, I'll say, it's important to understand something. So you'll say to yourself, so who cares she made without her knowledge? Zokun adam shalo b'fanam. The general idea is that you could always do something that is objectively beneficial for someone not in their presence. So remember, Erev Tchumen is never objectively beneficial. Why? Because remember, with Erev Tchumen, whatever you gain on one side, you always lose on somewhere else. So even though you'd say, aye, but it's objectively beneficial for her to get home. So remember, Zachalam Shalom Farnam, objective benefit means when there is no detriment, there is no downside. In a case like this, even though it's beneficial for her to get home, there is an objective detriment in that she loses mobility in the other direction. So the question is, so what was wrong over here? So two possibilities why Rabbi Chiya answered it. Either because the mother-in-law made it with her food and didn't convey ownership of her food over to her daughter-in-law, or no, maybe she made it with her daughter-in-law's food, but it was shalomidaita. She made it without the daughter-in-law's knowledge, and you can't make an erev tchumen for someone without their knowledge. Amar lahan, ahumi rabbanon. So one of the rabbis, Rabbi Yaakov was his name. He said, ledidim yifarshli mineg, Rabbi Yochanan. I heard this entire case, Mishal Chamol Seir Vala, that the problem that Rabbi Chiya had with this erev was, it was the mother-in-law's food, umishum delo zichsala. And the problem, of course, with it was what? Was that she did not convey ownership. And Rabbi says, here, remember what the Gemara is aiming at. The Gemara is trying to figure out, the Mishnah told us that by Shituf Muvaos, you need to go ahead and convey ownership interests of the food over to the intended recipients or the intended beneficiaries of the Shituf Muvaos. The Gemara says, does that apply to Erev Tchumen as well? Seems to me now we have an indication that it does apply to Erev Tchumen as well. That even if you're making an Erev on behalf of someone else, with your food, you have to convey ownership interests of your food over to them. Amrli Rabbi Zera, the Rabbi Yaakov, Brei Debas Yaakov. So Rabbi Zera said to Rabbi Yaakov, the son, listen to this, is actually interesting, the son of the daughter of Yaakov. And I will say, whenever you see something like this, is always quite interesting, that it's not referring to him by his father's name. So why doesn't it call, this is Rabbi Zera, so why doesn't it call Rabbi Yaakov the son of his father? So look at Rashi, he says over here, Brei Debas Yaakov, Aviv lo haya hagun. His father was not worthy. Therefore, the fichach lo huskrin. I will say, whenever you see that, it's got to mean it's more than just his father wasn't the Talmud Chacham. When it says his father wasn't hagun, it probably means that there was something major going on over here with his father, and therefore his father's name is not mentioned. Instead, he's known by his mother. Kimatis hasam. So listen to this. So this is Rabbi Zera says to Rabbi Yaakov, Kimatis hasam. When you go there, we'll see where there is in just a moment. Akif Vizil Lesulma Ditsur. Make a little bit of a detour and go in the pathway of Tsur. Make a detour to the city of Tsur. Okay. Uboy Mine Me Rab Yaakov Bar Idi. And ask the following question of Rab Yaakov Bar Idi. Boy Mine, ask him the following. Mishel Chamol Sa'irva Umishum Dolo Zichsa. So what's happening over here is Rabbi Zera wants to get further clarity on the story. So Rabbi Zera says to Rabbi Yaakov, when you go ahead and wherever he's traveling to, I want you to make a detour of Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, and I want you to ask him the following question about that story of the mother-in-law. What was the problem? What's the problem with the mother-in-law's Erev? The fact that she made it of her own food and she did not convey ownership interest of the food over to her daughter-in-law. Or was the problem the fact that what? That she really made it from the daughter-in-law's food, but it was without the daughter-in-law's consent. Amrle, so apparently when he reached Rabbi Yaakov Aridi said, Mishal Chamosa Irvala, the problem with that case is the mother-in-law made it of her own food, Umishum Delo Zichsala, and because she did not convey ownership interest of that food over to her daughter-in-law, that was the problem. Amr Rav Nachman, and therefore we learn, Naktinon, Echad Eruvei Tchumin, Ve'echad Eruvei Chatzeros, Echad Shetufei Muvaos, Tzarech Lezakos. So both bottom line is, Lemaisa, in order, whenever you're making any of these type of Eruvin on behalf of other people, you must always go ahead and convey ownership interest to the intended recipients. Boy Rav Nachman. So both now we have Eruv Chatzeros, Erev Tchumen, Shituf Muvaos, right? All three of those things, if you're making on behalf of other people, you have to convey ownership. Boy Rav Nachman, Erev Tavshilin, Tzarech Lezakos, or Intzarech Lezakos. So now we'll say we've covered Erev Chatzeros, Erev Tchumen, Shituf Muvaos. What about Eruv Tavshilin? So let's say, remember, what is Eruv Tavshilin? Eruv Tavshilin is the halachic mechanism that allows you to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos, right? So this is, let's say, if you have a Yom Tov going right into a Shabbos, you can't prepare everything before Yom Tov for Shabbos. I want to be able to, the problem is, I can't prepare a Yom Tov for Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that. You can only prepare a Yom Tov for Yom Tov. But I need some kind of mechanism, so we'll spend, Maseches Beitza deals with this extensively, we'll get to it then, but suffice it to say, what an Eruv Tavshilin is essentially you go ahead and you begin your cooking process for Shabbos prior to Yom Tov, right? So you set aside a cooked item, a baked item, so very often we use a matzah or an egg, whatever, you can use really whatever you want, but it's also one cooked item, one baked item, so it's considered as if the Shabbos preparations have begun during the Erev Yom Tov, and then for anything else that occurs in Shabbos preparations, it's considered to be an extension of that act from Erev Yom Tov, and therefore, halachically, it's not as if you're preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbos, but you're preparing from weekday to Shabbos. So we'll say, why do they bring up the discussion about Erev Tavshilin? If you look at the formulation of Erev Tavshilin, something very interesting, which is that it says, I'm making this Erev Tavshilin on behalf of myself and all of the members of my community. So we'll say, I'll tell you, so for example, when we make the Erev Tavshilin in our home, so we have in mind that our Erev Tavshilin should cover everyone in the Kehillah. Everyone in the Kehillah, why? Because it happens that people forget Erev Tavshilin. So if you forget the Erev Tavshilin, you could be in significant trouble. How are you supposed to prepare for Shabbos? So when we make an Erev Tavshilin, so we make it on behalf of everyone. So now the interesting part is, but now what does that mean? So we'll say, what the Gemara is asking over here is suffice. So now I make my Erev Tavshilin, and I make it to cover all the members of the shul. So the shaila now is that verbal declaration enough? Or do I actively have to convey ownership in some way to the members of the shul? So the Gemara, that's it, asking. Tzarech lezakos, or in tzarech lezakos. So is it enough to make the verbal declaration, or do I have to actively convey ownership to the members of the shul? Amar Rav Yosef, umayti boile. Rav Yosef says, what's the question? Lo shmiele hada amar Rav Nachman, bar Rav Ada amar Shmuel. Have you not heard the statement that Rav Nachman bar Rav Ada sent name Shmuel? A ruvei tavshinin tzarech lezakos. Even when it comes to Erev Tavshilin, Rabbos, if you're making it on behalf of the collective, then what? Then you have to convey ownership interest to them. So we'll say, Amalei Abaye, pshita delo shmiele. Obviously, he didn't hear it. The ishmiele, mighty boile. So Abaye gets like a little bit upset over here. Right? So Abaye says, of course he didn't hear it. Remember, this is Rav Nachman asking the question. So of course Rav Nachman didn't hear it. If Rav Nachman heard Shmuel's statement, then what? Then he wouldn't have asked the question. The ishmiele, mighty boile. Amalei, atu eruvei tchumin. Milo Amar Shmuel ain't Tzarech Lezakos. But yet, when it came to Erev, the reason the Gemara is asking is because Rav Nachman heard that when it came to Erev Tchumin, Shmuel said that you don't have to actively convey ownership. Va'amra iyu Tzarech Lezakos. And yet Rav Nachman said you have to convey ownership. To which the Gemara says, Hach, so Rav said, what, therefore the Gemara is asking over here is Rav Nachman argued before on Shmuel. Simi Rav Nachman will argue over here on Shmuel. To which the Gemara says, no. Hashta bishlama hasan pligi Rav uShmuel. In the previous case by Erev Chatzeros, Rabbos said there was a machlokis Rav and Shmuel. Excuse me, by Erev Tchumin, there was a machlokis Rav and Shmuel. You have to convey ownership. Shmuel said you don't have to. Right? Rav said you do have to. The kamash Shmuelon kechumrin demar, the kechumrin demar. And therefore Rav Nachman sided with Rav in that previous case and said that even in Erev Tchumin you have to convey ownership. Aval hacha. So Rabbos said, but over here in the case of Erev Tavshilin, there's no one who argues on Shmuel. Right? Everyone agrees that what? That if you're doing the Erev Tavshilin on behalf of another group of people, you have to actively convey ownership to that group of people. So Rabbos, I'll tell you, so Lamaisa, what you do is in that case, when I make the Erev Tavshilin on Erev Yom Tov. So again, remember, we go back to our previous case. The problem, if you're making an Erev on behalf of someone else, the makneh can't be the konah, right? You can't be the one who's giving over the right and the one who's acquiring on behalf. So what I do is I give it over to my wife, right? So because remember that's based on the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says that a wife is an independent entity of her husband. So I make the Erev Chatzeros and I say I'm making it on behalf of the entire community, and then I give it over to my wife, and my wife acquires it on behalf of all of the members of the Kehillah. So lemaisa again, so we go ahead and we make it on behalf of everyone else, but it's not enough to make the verbal declaration. We pass in like Shmuel that you actively have to convey ownership to the people you're making it for. But I can't be the one who's giving the rights and acquiring the rights, and therefore we take an independent third party who acquires it on behalf of everyone who's covered under the Erev. How do I give it to her?
Well, you just posture.
I mean, I go to the mikvah first. I see any mikvah and mazuman, you know. It's, right, you know. No, just a simple act of handing it over. Right. No process for it. So the Gemara says, "Vayter, how he turzina." So we'll say now the Gemara is going to give a couple of interesting cases. There was a turzina. Now, what's a turzina? So Rashi says over here, turzina nochri haya zinanju. Memuna al klei zayin ha'asuyin l'shmiras ha'ir lehilachim al atzonim v'darbiya. So what's that? This is interesting. Apparently, cities had an armory. So what happened? Who was in charge of the armory? A non-Jew. So what's that? The partial reason they had a non-Jew was also constant access. There's no Shabbos or Yom Tov issues. So there was a non-Jew who was in charge of the armory. He had the keys to the armory. What happened? Dehava b'shvivuseid Rabbi Zeira. He lived in the neighborhood of Rabbi Zeira. So we'll say, just before we go on, just the bottom line halach lamaisa from the previous sugya, so far what we have is the following. Number one is this concept of shituf muvos, that you don't have to go person to person, but rather, again, one person could donate the contents, could donate a barrel of food, and he could be makne that to everybody else in the chatzar. We've also seen now that in general, for Erev Tchumin, Erev Chatzeros, we have seen Erev Tchumen, Erev Chatzeros, Shituf Muvaos, and now Erev Tavshilin. So in order to make it on behalf of other people, you must what? You must actively go ahead and convey ownership to others. And in order to convey ownership to others, the person who owns the object can't be, or the makne can't be the kona. You need an independent third party to go ahead and acquire it on behalf of everyone else. Fine. Because now I'll say the Gemara is switching topics a little bit. The Gemara is going to the following case. So in the chatzar of Rabbi Zeira lived this turzina. Now what happens? We'll say when you have a non-Jew who's living in the chatzar, what do you have to do in order to make an eruv? You must rent his rights. Amrle ogil on Rosh Hashanah. So he said to the non-Jew, "Rent us your rights." Lo ogil luhu. He would not rent it to them. Asu lekamit Rabbi Zeira. They came before Rabbi Zeira. Amrle mahu lemeger midavisu. Can we go to his wife? So now the non-Jew won't rent it. So they could we go to his wife? Apparently, again, I guess his wife is a little bit more agreeable. So could we go and rent the rights for his rishus from his wife? Amar lehu hachi amar Reish Lakish b'shmei the gavra rabba. So Reish Lakish is the name of a great man, and who was it? Umar Rabbi Chanina. Ishto shel adam ma'areves shlomi daito. A person's wife could enter into the eruv even without her husband's das. So it sounds like a wife has the right to enter into the eruv without her husband's consent. Without her husband's knowledge. So apparently that's a yes. You can apparently go to the wife of the Torzina and rent the rights from him. So the Gemara gives another story. Hahu Torzina Davi Vishivu Seid Rabbi Huda Bar Oshia. There was the same, this non-Jewish watchman who lived in the neighborhood of Rabbi Huda Bar Oshia. Amrile Ogerlan Rishuseich. So they said to him, rent us your rights. Lo Ogerlu, he wouldn't do it. Asala Kamet Rabbi Huda Bar Oshia. They came to before Rabbi Huda Bar Oshia. Amrile Mahu lemegar midavisu. So interestingly enough, they came up from Rabbi Yehuda Bar Oshia, and what happens? They asked him, "Could we rent from the non-Jew's wife?" Lo hava biyadei. He didn't know the answer. Also, the coming to Rav Masna. They came to ask Rav Masna. Lo hava biyadei. Rav Masna didn't know the answer. Also, the coming to Rabbi Yehuda. They came up from Rabbi Yehuda. Amr lohu hachi amr Shmuel. This is what Shmuel said. Ishto shal adam ma'areves shalom idaito. That a person's wife could go and enter into the Eruv even without his das, even without his knowledge. Meisveis, where is the kasha? Nashim she'irva v'nishtatvu shalomi das ba'alein, ein Eruv and Eruv, ve'ein shituf an shituf. But there was no, we have a brisa that explicitly contradicts this. And what does the brisa say? That if a person's wife, right, if a person's wife entered into an Eruv, or entered into a shituf muvos, without the knowledge of her husband, then what? Such an Erev, in fact, is not good. So what's the contradiction? So can a woman do it, or can a woman not do it? Interestingly enough, there are answers. Lo kasha, had the aser. So I'll say, everything depends on the nature of the man's involvement in the Erev. Look at Rashi, had the aser, abnei hamavoi, lo ba'ina da'ate. So I'll say, when do we say that a wife could enter into an Erev even without her husband's explicit consent? Is when his non-involvement, his non-participation on the Eruv, will make it usher for everyone else to carry. Right? That's, I mean, you will say, essentially, when the stakes are very high for his non-participation, we will let his wife even commit him to the Erev, even without his knowledge, which is even more than without his knowledge. What is it? It's even against his wishes. Even against his wishes. Because we're both saying, what we'll see is, you know, if you have a falling out with someone in your chatzar, you know, the real easy way to give it to him and to give it to everybody else is what? Is not to participate in the Eruv. So if you're a Jew, it's not to rent out your rights. And if you're a non-Jew, it's not to rent out your rights. And if you're a Jew, it's not to participate. So Chazal had to have a little bit of a back door to this, because otherwise you're really going to put people at an incredible disadvantage. So Chazal said like this: if the guy's non-participation in the Eruv is a deal breaker for everyone else, then what? We'll go through his wife. Even though, again, it's not really appropriate because you know that his wishes are not to participate, but we can't make everyone else's life impossible, so we'll go through his wife. But Lemaisa, if he has not a participation in the Erev, is not crucial, then Lemaisa, there's no need for us to go to his wife, we can ignore him. When do you have a non-crucial case? So we'll say, Rashi actually points out, we had the case before, if you remember, this would be the case of a chatzir in between two mavois. And remember again the case where we had, where let's say he really only uses one of the mavuis. So as much as we would like him to participate in the shitov in both mavuis, at the end of the day, he really doesn't have to participate in the mavui that he does not travel through. That's a case of like non-crucial participation. In that case, then, if he doesn't want to participate, we can really just ignore him. Somebody could ignore him, we'll ignore him. But in cases where we can't ignore him, because his non-participation will essentially ruin the era for everyone else, then we'll go through his wife. So the Gemara says, this seems to be a clear distinction. Dim came, because if you don't say this, Kashi the Shmuel himself contradicts himself. The Amr Shmuel, Echad mi b'nei Mavoi. If you have one of the members of the Mavoi, Sheroga lihishtatef in b'nei Mavoi, who regularly participated in a shituf with the other members of the Mavoi, v'lo nishtatef. And now he decided that he's not participating. Right? Rashi says, last Rashi in the Daf, lo nishtatef. In a row, he doesn't want to participate. Why? Why doesn't he want to participate? He wants the mamish, he wants to give it to them. So what happens? So the Gemara says, B'nei ha-mavoi, nichnasin l'soch beso, v'notlin shitufan mimeno ba'karcho. Well, this is pretty stark. So what happens? The people of the mavoi walk right into his house, and they say, thank you very much for your participation, right? And they grab food from his house for the sheet of Mavos. Then we'll clarify this in just a moment. Rogil in. Now this is only if what? This is only if he regularly participates in the Erev. Now regularly participates in the sheet of means what? That it's necessary for him to participate. Shein Rogil, but if his non-participation is not really a deal-breaker for us, lo. Now we'll say, Tosas points out, Shmamina. So we'll say, Tosas points out, in Tosas Rogil. See that Tosas there? So if you look on the first wide line of that Tosas, seven lines in, the notlin shitufo ba'karcho de ka'amar haylu shabal abayis aval das ishto tzorek. So when we talk about taking a shituf against his will, that only goes so. What does against his will mean? Against his will means against his will, but what? But with the acquiescence of his wife, meaning you need one of the spouses to participate. Meaning if the wife is just as obstinate as her husband, and she says, I'm not giving you anything, you can't have like a sheet of SWAT team. You know, these guys come and kick down the door, take the sheet off, and now that far you can't do. So you need the acquiescence of someone. The idea is, so again, Rabbi, what comes out over here is, so if their participation in the sheet of, or in the Erev for that matter, is absolutely necessary for everyone else, then the Maisa, even if the husband is vehemently against, as long as you could get the wife's buy-in, then it will allow for them, that you could join in through the wife. If they're both obstinate, then in Achinam, you really could be stuck. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Lema Misayeh Alei, Kofin Oso, La'asos Lechi V'kor L'mavoi. It was an interesting case. You can force someone to participate or to make a Lechi and a Kora in the Mavoi. So also remember, this is now going back, in order to carry in a Mavoi that's open on one side, you need some type of Tikkun. Remember, it's going all the way back to the beginning of Erevin. Right, you could force them to go ahead and mix either a lechi, mechi, lechi, or kor is your vertical, your horizontal beam. To which the Gemara says, so you could force someone's participation. And we'll say, it's not exactly clear why you would need to force someone. to participate in the lechi or the korah, because lemaisa, again, really what it means is, even if someone says, I am vehemently against I don't want to put up the lechi or the korah because it's going to ruin my sight lines. Right? That's good. You could force them to participate in lechi or the korah on the days, to which the Gemara says, well, that case is a little bit different already. Why? Shiny hasam, the lechi mechitzos. Well, that case over there is a little bit different. Rashi points out over here, shiny hasam, the lechi mechitzos, umavoy megulahu, therefore the mavoy is totally open on the end side, on the fourth side. The eno noach l'shomro, hilchach, kofin oso. Rashi's very interesting answer. Rashi says that Lamaisa, it's because again the lechi or the korah makes some semblance of an entranceway, and having some semblance of an entranceway is important at least for the visual security of the actual mavoi. By leaving it totally open puts the mavoi at some type of security risk. Going in and making some type of entranceway on the fourth side apparently contributes somewhat to the security of the mavoi, and contributing to the security of the mavoi, so it's in the best interest of everyone. Okay. The Gemara says, Lishna Achrina, Mitzad Shani. Now both sides, Dago Sabach erases these words. This apparently is some type of corrupted text. This Lishna Achrina Mitzad Shani, because it doesn't make any sense. Itmar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Rav Chiya Bar Ashi says the fine. So both sides, again, before we get into this last piece, so what comes out, L'naisa is, we adopt this distinction in the Gemara, is that a wife could go ahead and enter into an Eruv, even without the knowledge of her husband, but that's limited to when their participation is essential. When their participation is essential to allow everyone else to carry, then we will even allow the wife to enter in on behalf of her husband or on behalf of the home, even when what? Even when it's clearly against the express wishes of her husband. But if, again, their participation in the Eruv is not necessarily crucial for everyone else, then we will not allow the wife to enter in against the wishes of the husband, simply because we don't need to do that. So the Gemara goes weiter. Itmar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar. Let's just finish and then we'll take questions at the end. So Itmar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar. Rav Chiya Bar Ashi said, Osin Lechi Ashera. You can make a Lechi from an Ashera. The Rabbi said, this is quite interesting, because remember, an Ashera tree is an Avodah Zarah tree. And generally, you can't get any level of benefit from Avodah Zara. Yet, Rav Chiya Bar Ashi said, you can make a lechi from an Ashera. Now, why is that, Rabosai? Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, we're not up to it yet, but look at lechi, koshkin lechi, ge'elo shil rachbo v'ogab. Now, the reason the Gemara seems to say is why? Because a lechi doesn't have a defined width. A lechi could be any width. Rabosai, what's interesting is, although a lechi could be any width, a lechi does have a requisite height, which is 10 tefachim. So look at Tosas for just a moment. Tosos says, it's actually Tosos about Korah, Kesusei Mikdashio, we'll get to this in a little bit. Right? So Tosos, Afagav de Lechi Nami Boi Shir Gova, the Gamrochav Mashu. So a Lechi does have to be 10 tefachim high, and does require some minimal amount of width. Mihu Boi Mikomakom, Kevan de Lo Boi Elashir Zuta. So we'll say, the idea is, well, actually I'm really skipping ahead. Let's first read this Gemara, then we'll explain all this. So comes on with Chibar Ashi and says, you can make a Lechi out of an Asher tree. Rav Shimon Lakish Omer, Osin Korah Ashira. Reish Lakish says that you can make a Korah out of an Ashira. Both say Korah is your beam that goes across. So the Gemara says, Mandam or Korah, the Mandam says that you can make a Korah out of an Ashira, Kol Shekin Lechi. All the more so you can make a Lechi. O Mandam or Lechi, and one says you can use a Lechi, Aval Korah Lo. But Korah, no, why not? Kisusei Mechta Ashira. Both say, here's the interesting idea. Korah, we know Korah as a shir. What's the shir of a Korah? A Korah has to be a tefach across. Because remember again, a Korah has to be the width to be able to support the size of a half a brick. So a Korah has to be, the Korah has a defined shir, a defined width. The Rabbo said, whenever you use something belonging to Avodah Zarah, there's a concept of michtas kitusei shi'ure, which means that since Avodah Zarah has to be destroyed, halachically it's as if it is destroyed, and therefore what? And therefore lemaisa, anytime it doesn't have the right shear. It doesn't have the right shear. So to use a korah of Avodah Zarah is not good. Why? Because essentially it's lacking the shear of a tefach. Rabbi says it's the same way, interestingly enough, if you got your hands, let's say it's Hanukkah time, and you found the great mitzvah on Avodah Zarah oil. Amish, right? Target, right? You found a great deal on Avodah Zarah oil. So you bought Avodah Zarah oil, and you're putting it in a Hanukkah, and it burns beautifully. You have not discharged your mitzvah. Why? because oil for Ner Chanukah, you must have enough oil to remain lit for a half hour, and anything belonging to Avodah Zarah is considered to be deficient in its shear. It's as if you don't have enough oil. So therefore, the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, the one who says you could use a lechi, because apparently lechi doesn't require a shear, but korah does require a shear. Korah does require a shear, and therefore when using a korah of an asherah, the shear is deficient. However, the man who says you could use a korah, so if you say that you could use a korah of an asherah, all the more so what? All the more so you could certainly use a lechi, which does require shear. So now Tosas says, Poritra about lechi does require shear. Look at Tosas, aval korah kesusi mechtas shiure. So Tosas says, Afagav de lechi nami boi shear, even though lechi also does require a shear, shear gova, requires a certain shear, if I let me 10 tefachim lai, vegam rochav mashu, and it does require some basic width. Miha boi, mikomakom, kevan de lo boi, ela shear zuta, loech mirabo. But since a lechi is such a small, almost insignificant shear, therefore we consider as if it doesn't need a shear. So Rabosai Lemaisa, what comes out is a fundamental machlokis as to what you can use. Now just you should know, Halacha Lemaisa, we say, the Rambam paskins, that if you used a lechi of Avodah Zarah, of an Asherah, then the Ikara din it works. However, Lechatchila, of course, you should not use it. But if you used a korah, if you used the korah of an Asherah, such a korah would not be good. Why? Because a korah does have a defined shear of a tefach. And any time you have the need for a defined shear, something from Avodah Zarah will never satisfy that shear. Says the Mishnah. Mismait ha'ochal. If now, Rabbi says, so this is a follow-up on the previous Mishnah. So what happened? You went ahead and you set up, you're using the barrel for the Shituf Mvos. And what happens? The food in the barrel becomes deficient, right? Over time, the food in the barrel is now diminished. So what's the halacha? Mosif umizake, you add on food as necessary, umizake, and you convey ownership of that food to the residents of the chaseros. Vein sarach lodia, but you don't have to tell anyone about it, right? I'm also saying because the assumption over here is it's all part of the original shituf. So if the food falls below the minimal threshold, you have to replenish it, but you need not say anything to anyone. Nitos v'aleihen. And Rabbi said, what happens if lemaisa? Nitos v'aleihen means, let's say new residents moved into the chaseros, then what? Most, if you have to add on more food for them. Umizake. And in that case, Rabbi said, you have to do another act of acquiring ownership rights on their behalf. Vitzarech lodia. And you have to go ahead and tell them, what's being done. So the Gemara says, Kamu Shiurun. So how much food do you have to have in the barrel for the residents of the Chatzeros? So Bisman Shein Merubin, when there are a lot of residents, Mazon Shtei Sudos Lekulam. All you need, Rabosai, is enough food for two meals. Now I want to be clear. Not enough food for two meals for everyone, but what? Two meals. That's all. You need enough food for two meals, and that's enough for everybody there. Bisman Shein Mu'atin. When you have fewer numbers of residents, and we'll define these numbers in just a moment, kigrogeres lachol echad ve'echad, there has to be enough of a shear of a dried fig for each of them. Now we'll say, it doesn't literally mean you have to use figs. What it means is you need a dried figs amount of food for every person in the chatzer. So the Gemara goes on, Amar Rabbi Yossi, b'met ramur, when is that true? B'tchilas eruv. When are these shiurim correct? That's only when you're first making the eruv. Ava bishiyari iruv, but Rabbi said, once you've made the iruv, then what? Even if the iruv diminishes over time, kol shehu. As long as you have a little bit of food left, even if it's not enough for a fig's amount for each of them, that's okay. But lo amru la'ariv bechatzeros elakadi shelo shakeach esatinokos. As we saw this before, remember, all of this is talking about shituf muvaos. So now the Mishnah just adds in and says, oh, and by the way, when you have a shituf muvaos, then what? Technically speaking, you do not need an Erev Chatzeros. So if you don't need an Erev Chatzeros, then why do we do it? We do it in order that the institution of Erev Chatzeros not be forgotten. Because remember, what the Mishnah is saying over here is, technically speaking, when you have a Shituf, that is enough, but we make you do an Erev anyway, because remember, most people don't see the Shituf Mubos. So in order that the concept of Erev Chatzeros not be forgotten, we make you make an Erev Chatzeros, even though what? You can rely on the Shituf Mubos. Says the Gemara, my asking on. What's the case? And also, what the Gemara is asking over here is in the case the first case in the Mishnah where the Mishnah says nismait. If the food of the shituf was diminished, so what can you do? You can go ahead and add on to the food, and you don't have to tell anyone in the chatzar. Rav Osai, the inference that the Gemara is making over here is if the food were to totally be finished, then what? You'd have to replace the food, and what? You'd have to tell the members of the chatzar. So the Gemara really is asking why. Maya askinon, ilim of minechad, if you're replenishing the shituf food with the same type of food that you used before, then what? Then why is there a need to tell anyone? Might your yenismait? Then why does it have to do with the case of the where the food is diminished? Afilu kala, even if the food was totally finished, nami, you shouldn't have to tell anyone. Ela bishne minin. Rather, what's the case? The case must be Rav Osai where you made the eruv, you made the sheaf of levos with one type of food, and now what? And now you're replacing it with another type of food. Right. So let's say I made it with figs, and as Zachariah, I'm replacing it with cocoa puffs. Right. Good. I'm going to borrow your cocoa puffs for the sheet of muvos. So what happens? So the Mishnah says, in that case, afilu nismait nami lo. But if the Hezer was supposed to, then if you are replacing, you're supposed to, and the Gemara presupposes, but the Gemara assumes that if you are going ahead and replacing sheet of food with different type of food, then what? You automatically have to tell everyone as part of the sheet of what's going on. This side, because we learned, kala ha'ochal min echot, if the food ultimately ran out of the shituf, but you're replacing it with the same food, you don't have to tell anyone in the chatziros about that. However, but if you're replacing it with another type of food, then what? Tzarech lo'odio. Then you have to tell everyone. So the Gemara says, you can understand the Mishnah one of two ways. You can understand the Mishnah as talking about replacing it with one type of food, or you can understand the Mishnah as replacing it with another with two types of food, or I should say a second type of food. It could be that it's talking about replacing it with the same type of food. And what's the case of nismait? Nismatmate. When it says nismait, doesn't mean nismait. Nismatmate means what, Rabbi Osai? The food is totally gone. You finish the food of the shituf. And yet, what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says when you finish the food of the shituf, you need not go ahead and what? You don't have to tell anyone that you're replenishing it, as long as what? As long as what? You're using the same food. The second possibility is Mishneh Minin, that it's talking about two different types of food, and kala shiny. And Rabbi say what? The halacha is like this. If you're replacing with a second type of food, then it depends what the status of the shituf is. If there's still food in the shituf, but you're just bolstering it with a second type of food, you don't have to tell anyone about that. But if the shituf mamish totally ran out, then what? Now you're replacing with a second type of food, then what? Then you must tell the resident of the chatziros that you're replacing with a new type of food. Nitos valein mosefel mezakeh. If new residents of the chatzir moved in, you have to add on additional food, and you have to convey ownership to them. Amarav Shizvi, Amarav Chista, Zos Omeris, this tells us, Chalukin Alav Chaverav Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda's friends disagree with him. What did Rabbi Yehuda's friends say? This nan, Amarav Yehuda, B'medar Murm, when is this so? Be'eruv E'tchumim, Ava Be'eruv E'chatzeros, Ma'arvin Bein Ladas, Bein Shalol Ladas. So what's Rabbi Yehuda said? That the only time you need a person's consent, or you need to tell a person ultimately that you're making an Erev on their behalf is when? Is by Erev Tchumim. Why Rabbi Ozan? Because like we said before, because they lose something on the other side. But when it comes to Erev Chatzeros, which would also seem to include Shituf Mubos, you don't even have to tell the person that you're making an Erev on their behalf. Why? Because it's an objective schus. So apparently our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Pshita. Dechalukin. Alright, that's obvious, you're right. The Mishnah disagrees with that because our Mishnah says what Rabbi Osai? That when new people move into the Mavon, what do you have to do? You have to tell them that you are doing this on their behalf. I might have thought that only applies to a chatzer in between two Mavois. Why Rabbi Osai? Because again, then by making a shituf on him, what are you doing? You're by definition including him in one Mavoi and what? Precluding him from the other. But I might have thought that maybe if he belongs to a chatzir that only has one mavui, maybe I don't have to tell him anything. Because after all, again, there's an objective schus, there's no downside to that. Hamashmon, that even in that case, I still have to inform him that I'm going ahead and including him in the mavui, including him in the shituf. Kamahushiguro. So I'll say, what that's saying over here is that Lamaisa, the Machlokis Rabbi Huda still stands. That even that Rabbi Huda hold, that the Mishnah, our Mishnah still holds, that even though, again, there's no downside to including him in this particular Shituf, you still have to inform him that you are including him in the Shituf, which is not like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that you need not tell someone that you are including him in an Erev Chatzeros or Shituf Mavos. Says the Gemara, one more piece. Kamu Shiuro. So the Mishnah said, remember how much is the Shiur of the Shituf? So the Mishnah indicated that Lamaise, if you have a lot of people who live in the Chatz, a lot of people who live in the Mavui, then what? All you need is Mazon Shtei Sudos. But if it's Mu'atin, if you have fewer residents, then what? You need the size of a dried fig for each of them. So the Gemara says, Kamush Sukamahim Merubin. What is a lot of residents? What's the definition of a lot of residents? Amar Rav Yehuda Shmuel, Shmonas Rai B'nei Adam. Right? 18 people. 18 people. Shmona Esrei V'sulo, 18 and no more. Ema Mishmona Esrei Ve'ilu. No, what it means is a lot of residents mean from 18 and above. Umay Shmona Esrei Dinakit. So why 18? Amar Rav Yitzchak Breit Rav Yehuda Ledimi Farshle Minei Da'aba. I learned from my father the following. Kol She'ilu Mechalko L'mazon Shtei Sudos B'nehen. Ve'ein Magas Grogeres L'chol Echad Ve'echad. Hein Merubin. So I will say, anytime if you were to take a food, right, two meals worth of food, and split it among the residents of the Chatzar, and each one would only get what? Would only get a fig's amount, a dried fig's amount. That's called a lot of residents. V'sagi b'mazon shtei sudos. And mostly whenever you have a lot of residents, so all you need for the shituf is the food equivalent of two meals. V'ilo, and if not, hen mu'atin. Meaning, we'll say if they would get more than a grogeres, then what? Then what? Then l'maisa. That's called mu'atin. That's called a few residents. The Agav Orche Kamash Malon, and Mishnah is teaching us, as an aside, Dishtei Seudos Havion Shmona Esrei Gogaros. They will say, what's the size of two meals? The size of two meals is the shear of 18 dried figs. So we'll say, Lemaisa, what comes out from this is, if you have 18 or more residents, all you need is Mazon Shtei Seudos, the food equivalent of two meals for your Shituf. But if you have less than 18 residents, then what? Then the Shituf must include at least a dried figs amount for each resident of the Chatzim. Okay, we'll also stop over here.